Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? You can watch it.
Oh. Hi there. I am Carol Jurgensen. She's so glad to be with you. They call me Carol the Coach. This is the show about sex addiction and also about sensitive partner trauma. So I just want to say it is a pleasure and an honor to be with you. I do this every Monday night. I interview the experts in the field of sexual addiction and treating trauma betrayal for partners. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about what we've got going on. Obviously, tonight we're going to be talking about a new approach to talking to your kids about porn. And so often as therapists, we are taught to give consequences when kids act out. And tonight I'm going to be talking with a woman who has made it her mission to help others who don't know how to handle their kids who have perhaps been drawn to porn either because they've experienced some sexual trauma already in their past or they've been quote-unquote accidentally exposed to inappropriate images via media. So I can't wait to hear what she has to say. She is an amazing therapist. Her name's Stephanie, and she's going to be talking a little bit about ATCN, specific model that works with children who have an addiction to sexual images, especially those who have been sexually abused. So we've got her coming on in the show in about 10 minutes. And in the meantime, I just heard that starting February 12th, Rob Weiss is going to be a volunteer host for a weekly live online sex and porn addiction webinar for In the Rooms. It's a nonprofit website dedicated to the recovery community and 12-step sourced healing. His goal is to introduce basic concepts about sex, porn, and love addiction to those who struggle and want to learn more on every level. So, if you're unfamiliar with the In the Rooms website, ITR, and that community, we urge you to check it out. And you can do that by going to www.intherooms.com. Who can come? Well, anyone from anywhere on the globe who has internet access. The cost is free. It starts at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time or 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it is going to occur weekly beginning February 12th. Now, let me tell you what you can expect. When you go to this website, you're going to learn about some pretty cool stuff. And as you know very much, where the field is headed. Today, ITR hosts over 150 12-step meetings weekly, open free to anyone all over the world. This is a place for someone not yet ready to attend a meeting or group, but wants to have the experience of doing such anonymously. So in these weekly interactive live discussions, anyone can ask questions, anyone can show up anonymously, or use a webcam if they wish. So again, to participate, people need only to sign up to be members of the In the Rooms community. It's free and very easy to sign up. Once there, they simply join the webinar and also get info on others doing interactive sessions on love and relationship recovery, mindfulness meditation, men's issues, and the like. Rob Weiss will present some very basic information each week and will then take questions. Hopefully, these very informal sessions will be highly interactive. We have only a few SLAA meetings on the sister site now, but he expects to see quite a few more online, as well as SAA, SCA, SRA, and again, SLAA meetings showing up there soon. So on the 12th, he's going to be talking about sex, porn, relationships, and addiction, and I encourage all of you to go to www.intherooms.com. In the future, he's going to be inviting knowledgeable guest speakers to join him on related topics. So if you're interested, make sure to get to that website and invite everyone you know who has this kind of a problem to sit in and check it out yourself. It's free, live, and all about sex, porn, and relationship recovery. I am very excited about that. I've already said to Rob, hey, Rob, if you go on vacation or something, I would love to host the show. You know me. I love hosting shows. So again, that website is www.intherooms.com. Now, I had an email from a man who says, hi, Carol. You know, I have been in therapy for a while, and I have a lot of experience with sexual addiction. Some things have developed now, and I wonder what your opinion is. In the last weekend, my wife, Karen, told me that she wanted to date other men, and she had a date Saturday night. She was out all night until 6 a.m., and on Sunday, after questioning her about phone records, she disclosed that she's been lying to me and meeting men in secret for a couple of months. She has discussed the possibility of her dating others before deciding if she wanted to reconcile a few months back, and I said I was okay with it as long as she was honest and didn't lie about it. I told her I didn't need to know details. Well, she says she thought I meant to do things without my knowledge. So I moved out of the house on January 4th thinking she was going to begin dating at that point, but I've learned since that she has a dating website account, she's had it for 2 months, and she's met several men for coffee. She's also had many late-night conversations and even phone sex while I was still living in the house. I am crushed to learn all of this. I am 5.5 months sober and working hard on my recovery. Karen is lost right now, and I'm fearful for her. I know I need to let her figure things out and that I can't interfere without risk of driving her further away. I don't know how to proceed. I miss her dearly, but I'm very hurt and anxious around her. Should I just stay away? Should I try to repair things while she's talking to other men? And then he says, any suggestion is greatly appreciated. Well, I got to tell you, we're going to call you Tom. Tom, I got to tell you, this sounds like a place for boundaries. And I know that every coupleship is different. And you're working on your sexual addiction, and it sounds like you're married to a sex addict. If not a sex addict, a sex and love addict. I don't know. But the bottom line is, if you knew it would hurt you, you should never have agreed to allowing her to date. Now, I hear you saying what you are most upset about is the fact that she held the secret. But I got to challenge you. I don't think it's just secret holding here. I believe that you are upset about the secret she's been holding and the fact that she's been dating people behind your back. And I understand. That would be a hard thing to take. Unless you two are a polyamorous, and for anybody who's listening, polyamory is when you have many relationships, and I don't sense that you are, this is a betrayal. It's a betrayal to you. It's a betrayal to your relationship. And what I want you to do is to think about boundaries. Now, personally, even though it's written for women, I would read My Sexually Addicted Spouse by Barbara Steffens and Marsha Means. I would also read the book Boundaries, because you're not going to get what you want out of life until you decide what your boundaries are. You know, you said, I'm crushed to learn all this. I'm 5.5 months sober and working hard on my recovery. And you're afraid to interfere without risk of driving her further away. And you don't know how to proceed. But I got to tell you, if you're not true to your boundaries, and if you don't set up what you expect from Karen, you're never going to get what you want. Do I think there's a way for you to rebuild a relationship? Absolutely. But you can't do that until you get honest and stop being wishy-washy about what you want. You know, if you do it in an assertive, loving, respectful manner, and she can't honor what you need, you two more than likely need to be separated. And you need to work on self-care and your own sense of assertiveness and boundaries. I hope your therapist is working with you on this. I'm sure he or she is. But I don't think you should just stay away. Yes, I would encourage you to try to repair things. But if she's going to continue to talk to other men, my experience as a therapist working with any kind of couple is when there's other people in the relationship, then there's a ghost in your coupleship. And you can't do good work. She can't stay focused on you. So you're going to have to decide what you need, and you're going to have to ask her for what you want. And if she can't do that, then I can only say that taking care of you and becoming a healthy individual who continues to work on your recovery is the best recommendation I can give for you. Keep talking to that therapist. It sounds like you need extra special time. Very, very hard. And again, I recommend those two books because they're two of the finest books in the field. You know, it may be that you've caused her a lot of hurt and she is on some level acting out her anger. I don't know. But what I do know is that you sitting quietly by yourself, meditating, journaling, reading spiritual material, and reflecting is the best way to get healthy. And it's the best way to decide what your needs are. And you know what I tell couples, I tell individuals, if you're following the 12-step program, then you know that your life is going to be different because of your higher power. No matter what happens, no matter whether she's in or out, if you're working on you, you're doing your recovery, you're doing the 12 steps, you're talking to your sponsor, you're getting therapy, you're journaling, meditating, praying, reading recovery material, reading SAA or SA literature, you can't go wrong. You may not get what you want, but here's what I promise. You'll achieve something very valuable in your life, and you'll attract that into your life. So don't give up the ship. Hang tight. Read those books. Take some time out and decide what you want. And your actions, if they are civil, if they're respectful, and if they're honest, will never push somebody away unless they're looking for a reason to leave. And I admire you for asking me the question. I know that was tough. So keep me posted. Let me know how you're doing. You know I care about my listeners. I want to know that they're getting their needs met. Recovery is tough, but it is so rewarding because you're investing in you, Tom. So you keep me posted, and we'll be thinking of you. You know, people care about doing the right thing. And if you're a parent who has kids, you probably want to know what to do if your child is looking at porn. Now, I got to tell you that Stephanie is a woman who has specialized in not only helping parents to deal with their kids that are looking at porn, she has taken it a step deeper, and she's working with ATCN, and that is a model that works with children who have an addiction to sexual images, and those kids may have been sexually abused, they may have been exposed to pornography, and that is really tough. So I want to welcome Stephanie to the show and this very valuable and important topic. I mean, we need to invest in our kids. So, Stephanie, welcome to the Sex Help with Carol the Coach show.
Hi, Carol.
Well, I just admire the fact that you have chosen this work because it's an investment in our future generations. Can you tell me just a little bit about how you got involved in this? And just kind of introduce yourself to our listening audience.
Okay. Well, I live in Omaha, Nebraska, so we're getting a lot of snow here tonight, so we're looking forward to that. We're supposed to get, like, maybe what you guys got the last time. So I actually started in schools as a counselor. And, you know, what's always interesting to me is how kids can be looked at as very naughty and their behaviors can be kind of purposeful. And as a school counselor, I was always just taken aback by all of these quote-unquote naughty kids. And from there, I thought to myself, I feel like I just can't make a real effect with these children in the school system. And then I decided to really, you know, go into private practice and partner with my colleagues, Deborah Wesselman and Kathy Schweitzer. And we helped create the Attachment and Trauma Center of Nebraska. And then from there, we created a specific protocol to really help kids who have suffered from attachment trauma. But what's a little bit different about our protocol in our center is that we also know just how vital it is to support parents. Parents are, you know, an important role in this. And I know many times when parents are parenting difficult children or children with just some really difficult issues, they can sometimes feel left out. They can sometimes feel like no one understands them. They tend to really isolate. And so we, you know, really look at, you know, obviously the child is a client, but really supporting parents as well. So we've been, you know, growing and changing our practice since 2008. And so that really is a little bit about me.
Okay, and so obviously this is a subject near and dear to my heart because I got into the field of sexual addiction because I was getting calls. I was this expert in a large hospital corporation, and I was getting calls from superintendents that said, you know what, Carol, we've got Joe and having oral sex on the bus, and kids are videotaping it, and we don't know where to go with this. We don't know whether to expel the kids, suspend them. You know, who do we talk to? How do we talk to them? And what I knew was that I didn't know what to do. I certainly interviewed the families. I talked to the families about boundaries and situations like that, but I didn't feel effective. And it sounds like you went into private practice so that you could determine what models worked with kids the best. So you had actually written an article concerning your son.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that, because, boy, that blends your professional life with your personal life.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting because, you know, I would say at least, you know, on a daily basis, or, you know, at least two or three times a day with thinking about, you know, something that has to do with being exposed to pornography. And, you know, I would like to get to at some point kind of how we work on that with kids in our practice. But, you know, one day I was at home and I was doing one of my favorite things to do, which is kind of, you know, just be alone for a little bit and watch documentaries. I pulled up Netflix and I noticed that someone had been watching some very disturbing images on Netflix. And I, you know, my brain immediately started to race. I thought, is this my husband? Is this, you know, who, you know, your brain just starts to wonder what is going on, you know? And I like to say that I am grateful that it happened at a time where there wasn't anyone else around, because I could take a minute to think about it. And we tell parents that as well, is when you find something that is disturbing and you find that maybe your son or daughter is looking at these images on the internet, you have to take a minute to really group yourself. And we call it, you know, get in your most calm self before you address the issue, because it's so triggering. So when my children came home from school, first, obviously, I called my husband and discussed this with him, figured out, you know, it wasn't him. My children came home from school, and as a past school counselor, I kind of know how to talk with children individually first before bringing it up with the whole group. So I talked to my oldest, and then I talked to my middle son. And my middle son, you know, after a very calm discussion, I said to him, you know, Isaac, today mommy found some things on Netflix that were really confusing to her. And I mentioned some of the names of the shows that he was watching. And I said, I'm just very concerned that you were watching these shows. And, you know, he immediately, I won't say immediately. It took him a little bit of time. It was quiet. And he said, yeah, mommy, I saw those pictures in my uncle's garage, and then I saw the pictures on the internet, and my brain, and these were his words, my brain just got addicted to them. And I couldn't even believe what was coming out of his mouth. And as a therapist, you know, you hear children say, when you give, my belief is when you give a child the chance to speak, you can hear them. And what I mean by that is when you really give a child this attuned, very connected, like open time to talk about what they're thinking and feeling, they will give you what's happening. And I was able to think about Uncle Jim's garage. And he has pictures up in his garage that, you know, are half-naked women. And, you know, as a mother, I didn't do a good job of shielding my son from that. And, you know, we then talked about it, and I said, well, here are some things, Isaac, that we're going to do to protect your brain and your body. And you know, I really, we talk in our office all the time, and it was obviously good practice for me to be able to talk with my clients about this first, but about how, you know, we're doing this to protect your brain and your body. Your brain can't be exposed to those kinds of things because your brain's not old enough yet to understand it. So I said to him, we're going to do all the things we need to do to protect your brain and your body. And so together, you know, we put lots of parental controls. And I know people out there are probably thinking, oh, my goodness, as a therapist, she knows this. Why wouldn't she put the parental controls on? And I have to answer and say, because I'm a human and I'm a parent. It didn't happen. And I think that's another thing for parents, you know, to really understand that you're going to make mistakes and to not hold yourself in a level of shame when you make a parental mistake, because gosh, it's so hard to parent. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
How old was your son when you discovered this?
9. He's 9.
And I don't know what the stats are now, but I know when we do our training, they said by the time a child is 11, a male boy, he will have seen at least 20 hours of adult images. And so, again, yes, you were a therapist, but he was 9 years old, and your brain hadn't gone there yet. I think it's reassuring for all of our parents out there to know that, yeah, it didn't cross your mind, and it won't cross theirs until we're educated.
That's absolutely right, Carol. That's absolutely right. And I really do thank you for bringing that up, because actually that's not something, you know, that really occurred to me on a level of just on my own verbal level that, yeah, as a 9-year-old, I didn't think I had to, you know. Of course, if my son were 13 or 14, I would. Yeah, that makes complete sense. What happened later,
though?
And I
love the fact that you said you were going to protect his brain. You didn't make it an issue of sex and shame. You made it about not old enough yet, and you want to protect his brain. I love that.
That's right. That's right.
So that took the shame right out of it, and kind of gave him some empowerment, too, because if you're going to protect his brain, hopefully he'll want to protect it, too.
That's absolutely right, yes. I then later I had found out that I had gone to YouTube and I'd seen that he had been watching some very disturbing things on YouTube as well. And that, you know, it was so eye-opening for me to really realize that, like you just said, the younger and younger they're exposed to these adult images. And, you know, we can only really do so much, but I do think we can try to just shield them as much as we can. So their brains aren't so confused. And I think sometimes sex and, you know, talking about sex and understanding it can be a very, can be shameful. And I think that when we make it just a very matter of fact discussion with our children, we can take away some of that shame. And I think that's really important.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, so after you've discovered this, you really made it your mission to decide how you were going to handle it and how you could pay it forward and pass the word on. So when you told him that you were going to help him protect his brain, what did you do next? How did you handle it?
Well, how did I handle it, you know, on my side of things, or do you mean directly with him?
Both.
Both.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with Isaac, I should say that it ended up happening with all three of my boys, because I ended up finding out that my 4-year-old was actually watching some of these things, too, with him. Obviously this wasn't in my piece that I wrote, for our newsletter, because really right after I had found out and talked with Isaac about it, what I needed to do, I needed to really take care of myself, because I was extremely shocked and disturbed, and I just have to say that I had so much emotion behind it. I needed to do something to really kind of get that emotion out. And so I just opened up my computer and started typing, typing my story. And I did it pretty much right away, because I needed to do something, therapeutic for me. I needed to do something for myself to keep myself in a very grounded, very connected place. As parents, when we're not grounded and we're not connected and we're not mindful, I feel like we tend to then do a lot of, we call it emotion-driven parenting. And with Isaac, I could have been very emotion driven. I could have said, I want you to, no more tablet, no more computer time. I can't believe you did this. You know better. You know better. You're not getting a snack. I didn't do any of that. And, you know, some people might think, well, my goodness, he didn't get a consequence. How is he ever going to learn by not getting a consequence? The truth is that consequences honestly do not work because he needed to have that connection. Kids who don't feel connected will go and do things that aren't good for their brains and their bodies because they don't feel connected to their caregiver. And my goal with him was to help him feel connected to me because I don't want him to feel connected to those images. So by consequencing him, that would have only driven him further away from me and driven him further towards the images. And that's not at all what we want to do. We want to be in a relationship with our children that helps them depend on us. So when they are exposed to these kinds of things, they can come to us as a home base, as a strong person, a strong caregiver, and talk to us about it. So hopefully that answered your question, Carol.
Well, yes, because then it sounds like you used a real compassionate type of parenting where you, you know, there was attunement and there was empathy and there was working together. There was a teammanship there that I don't think kids typically feel from their parents when they're scared. And obviously you were frightened. You were frightened about what has this done to his brain and what can I do about it and how has this affected his four-year-old little brother. And you just must have been on overload and overwhelm, and somehow you pulled it together and used compassionate conscious parenting. So where did you learn that skill, and how can our listeners learn that skill?
Well, you know, I truly believe it, you know, I call it the pause. And
okay.
I feel like if you can practice the skill of pausing when your child, when you are faced with a very triggering situation, if you can pause for a moment before you react or respond, because responding and reacting are two completely different things, if you react without the pause, there probably will be that element of shame with your child. But if you have time to just take a pause and think, what's more important, the consequence or my relationship with him? And the truth is, the answer is the relationship, because that is the answer. And hands down, that's what, and I'm not saying children never need consequences for behavior. That's not what I'm saying at all. But when a child does something that is very confusing to them and they don't know the boundary. He didn't know that boundary. He just did it. His brain literally just started to become entrenched in all of these images. And so I can't.
But hypothetically, it almost sounds like he experienced a form of what I call brain lock after seeing naked images at his uncle's house. There was an obsession or a fascination that occurred, and he wanted to see more of that.
Right. And, you know, Carol, that actually kind of is a great segue into how we work with kids in our offices about helping them understand this. And, you know, I did this specifically with Isaac later. I wanted him to understand why his brain became, quote-unquote, addicted. And so in our offices, we talk with children about how when your brain is exposed to an image too early and it doesn't understand it, what your brain tries to do, because your brain is an amazing organ, it's an amazing thing inside your body, it tries to continually make sense of it. So when we want to make sense of something, we seek it out. We look for it because our brain is trying to make sense of it. The truth mm-hmm. is, the way to make sense of it is for us to talk about it and make sense of it. So that, I mean, that really makes, that's exactly what happens, is because their brain is trying to make sense of what they don't understand, they keep getting drawn to it, that brain lock. That I love that. I love the way you said that.
Mm-hmm. So then you are talking about something called TCN, and will you explain to our listening audience what that is and how it is specifically focused on kids who may have been sexually abused? You know, the stats are that one out of every three girls and one out of every 10 boys, and these are reported cases, we know it's higher than this, will experience mm-hmm. some sort of sexual abuse in their childhood by the time they're 12. And so many of the kids that we all work with have had some experience like that. So what is the ATCN and how does that work?
So, well, ATCN is the Attachment and Trauma Center of Nebraska. And it, so there are four of us there right now who work specifically with children. And what we do is it's a team approach where we have two therapists working with a child. One therapist is the family therapist that works really intensively with the family doing psychoeducation and just helping that child have more adaptive material. And helping giving the child more adaptive material. The other therapist is the trauma-focused therapist, and we specialize in EMDR, eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing in our office. And we use EMDR for many things, but for these children, you know, obviously we use it for trauma reprocessing, but we also utilize EMDR for the attachment piece. And, you know, what you just said, so many of the kids who come to our office who've been, we talk about from really hard places. You know, Karen Purvis really coined that, being able to talk about children from hard places. And you're right, these children have been exposed to, you know, not only, you know, maybe some of them not sexually abused physically, but the images that they were exposed to really has caused them to be extremely, like, highly sexualized as young children. And mm-hmm. and so we work very specifically telling parents that truly the antidote to a lot of their difficulties is their connection and their relationship and their attachment with the parent. And, you know, obviously that's not the only antidote, but it is one of the major, major antidotes is being able to have that connection with the caregiver. Because, you know, in the past, so many attachment figures have harmed them, you know, sexually, with neglect or physical abuse. And so, you know, we just specialize specifically in helping these children understand their story, understand their past. You know, the research says that, you know, if you're able to tell a more cohesive story about your life, that, you know, your mental health is more stable. And so we really focus with these children on, you know, their story. And, you know, the team approach is very important. Like I said earlier in our discussion, these parents need support. And so when there's two therapists working with the family, I feel like the parent really feels like, you know, I've got a team of people around me who understand what I'm going through and are willing to listen if I've had a bad week, you know.
Right.
They're willing to connect with me. And, you know, it's the relationship not only with the child is important, but that therapist relationship with the parent, so that parent knows and understands that we can have all of us together can have a strong relationship.
That totally makes sense. And so your center is really a trauma center, and it has a whole team approach to helping kids.
That's correct.
Okay, and so...
The other thing that is a little different about our office too, is we have an adult wing, and a lot of our adults, we call them adult therapists. They work with the adults specifically. I see adults, but you know my caseload is, you know, balanced with children and adults. But many times, right within our office, we have parents who can see a therapist right in our office. And see a couple, you know, do couples work. And what's nice about that is that there is another whole team really surrounding the family. And, you know, we tell parents up front, you know, we do consultation, and we want you to know that we will be discussing, you know, in our treatment team meetings, you know, about best ways, you know, to work with your family. And families just always feel so supported because, you know, what children need is a safe, secure holding environment, right, to heal. Parents need that too, you know. And so if we can kind of create that safe, secure holding environment for the parent, then the parent can create that for the child.
That makes total sense. Now, what would you say are tips for monitoring your children? You know, I get so many questions from parents, both in my practice and even on this show, about should I check my child's email? Should I check their texting? Should I check browser history? You know, when is it an invasion of privacy versus when is it good parenting? So what would your advice be?
Well, you know, my advice might be contrary to a lot of people's advice, but, you know, I have this conversation with the child and with the parent that, you know, your mom and dad's job is to keep you safe. And the internet and TV, it's like being, it's the same as letting you go walk around the city by yourself. And your parent would never let you do that. And so we have, in order to keep you safe, your parent needs to know what's going on with your phone, with your internet activity. It's not about your parent snooping. It's not about them invading your privacy. It's about them being good, strong parents for you. We tell parents that What's important is for them to have clear and concise boundaries around electronics. I tend to be quite old school. I do not think there should be TVs and computers in bedrooms. I do not think that 12 and 13 and 14 year old kids should be able to take their phones to bed at night.
It's too much temptation, if nothing else, to be on the phone texting your friends, let alone surfing the net for interesting information.
Right. And I tell parents, I said, you know what, the rule for the house can be our phones are put away in this basket in our bedroom, parents' bedroom, at 9 o'clock or 9:30. It's where the phone goes. And in the morning, you know, then that's when you have the phone. And I always tell parents, it's about random checks. It's not about, I'm going to check your phone every single day. It's really about, you know, randomly looking at the phone. Because if your child knows when, you know, you're going to check the phone, then, you know, your child is going to increase your child's ability to want to hide things from you. You know, and always tell them, I'm doing this because I love you. I'm not doing this to be mean. I'm not doing this because I don't trust you. I'm doing this because it's about keeping that safe environment for you and taking care of you. If parents can do those things in real attuned ways, yes, teenagers are going to be upset about it. Of course they are. But that's okay. That means you're doing your job.
Well, and I really think that if at the time of getting a phone, that can be part of the negotiation. You know, we'll let
Absolutely.
You have a phone, but we need to let you know what some of our rules are. Kids will be so anxious to have the phone. they will agree to those rules, and they start right from the very beginning.
Yes. Well, and that is absolutely right. You know, if you know, you liken it to when you're teaching, you know, the child not to touch the hot stove, you do that right from the very beginning. It's the same thing with a phone. You know, you start as if you plan to go on, you know, in a very, you know, clear and concise way with very safe boundaries. All children just thrive in an environment where boundaries are clear. They just thrive.
Well, I absolutely agree. And so when kids, you know, especially as they get a little bit older, start accusing a parent of spying or investigating or not trusting them, then you just in a very compassionate way as a parent explain, no, this is to protect you, and this is one of the rules to having the phone. And if you don't like the rules, I guess we can take back the phone, but we want you to be able to have a phone, so I hope you can abide by mom and dad doing these kinds of things.
Yes. And then sticking to it. You know, kids like to push the boundaries, and they will. And they'll push the boundary as far as you allow them to push it. And that's where, you know, remaining steadfast. And if you need to take the pause before you're answering your child, if you need to say to the child, I hear, or to the teenager, I hear what you have to say. I hear what you're telling me. I need a break. We're going to talk about this again tomorrow. You know, I talk with parents about how nothing needs to be solved right away as long as there's repair. And you tell the child, I hear you. I understand what you're telling me. I need time to think, you know, because you don't have to make decisions in the moment. So many very knee-jerk decisions are made in the moment. And you know, I think about how I found out that Isaac was looking at those images, and I think about how grateful I was to have that pause, but sometimes we're not given that time. And that really is one of the greatest skills, is that mindfulness, that mindful awareness of, okay, so what's happening in me as a parent? Okay, now I need to take a minute, because you know, as parents, especially sexual images, depending on our history, on our childhood and the things that maybe happened to us, we can be even doubly, triply triggered by those situations. And that's why the pause is extremely important.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Now, you had earlier mentioned a newsletter, and it's actually how I got your name. So tell the people a little bit about the newsletter that you contribute towards.
Yes, so ATC, there's the Attachment and Trauma Institute, which is kind of our educational portion of ATCN, and we are on Facebook, the Attachment and Trauma Center Institute, and the Attachment and Trauma Center of Nebraska is also on Facebook. We are on Twitter, and what we do is quarterly, we write about a topic that is just intriguing for both therapists and parents. And we send out the newsletter, like I said, quarterly, and it has lots of information about upcoming trainings and different things like that. So I would just, you know, encourage you to go to Facebook, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. You know, we're always trying to find the most up-to-date information, you know, to share with everyone. Because I really do feel like, you know, I know it sounds so cliche, but it does take a village. And I think we can use things like Facebook and Twitter to really share amazing ideas on ways to handle specifically these images that, like you said earlier, Carol, our children are exposed to. I mean, the Super Bowl coming up, you just think about it. The images that my child will be exposed to as we watch the Super Bowl, it's all over.
That's such a good point. Now, I want to share again with our listening audience that they can check out your site, www.atcn.com. nebraska.com. And that website will give them valuable information that, that contributes to understanding how to talk to your kids. If they wanted to contact you directly, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, my email address is stephanie@atcnebraska.com, and Stephanie is spelled with an F and not a PH. You also can just go to the atcnebraska.com website. All of our contact information is written, you know, is on our website. We do have a parenting manual that we've written that really focuses on the attunement and really how to handle and deal with some of these most stressful times, and really how to specifically how to help children who are from hard places, who've suffered attachment trauma. Because what we know is children who have suffered attachment trauma, you know, they do have more significant, more magnified behaviors than children who have, you know, not suffered the significant attachment trauma. And it, the parenting of those kind of children from hard places is going to look different. But, you know, like my child, Isaac, is he's my biological child, but I use the same kind of parenting I teach to our parents of children from hard places, and I feel like it works with even biological kids. It's all about the relationship.
Yeah, good point. Now, you had also mentioned earlier that for kids that have experienced sexual abuse or been exposed, and you put in quotes when you were sending me information accidentally to adult images, did you mean if mom or dad is looking at pornography or older brother or older sister? I mean, what do you mean when you say kids accidentally viewing images?
Yeah, well, that is kind of like what happened, you know, I think what you just said is they are in front of the computer, something pops up that might be coming up from another user on that computer, they follow it, and now all of a sudden they're drawn in. And their brain, and we use that a lot with kids, is your brain, because it does take the shame really out of it, because shaming a child is not going to change their behaviors. It will only make it worse. And that's what I mean by accidentally, that you know, it's not like they intentionally are getting on the internet looking for these things.
Mm-hmm. Good point. So the last question I have for you, obviously you brought up EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization reprocessing, and you actually use it with children that have you know, attachment issues and have experienced trauma. Can you just explain to our listening audience how that technique works with kids? I happen to follow Andy Gomez, and you know, so I know that it's very successful. But can you explain how that works?
Well, you know, explaining how EMDR works can be, you know, in a nutshell, it can be really difficult. So I would ask the listeners to go to the EMDR website, EMDRIA website, the International Association. You can just Google it and go to the to EMDRIA to really read more about it. But what we know so far is it's bilateral stimulation, whether with eye movements, so eye movements moving back and forth, or buzzing sensations on the right and left side of the body, that they've found could actually stimulate the same centers in the brain as REM sleep. So what we know is when the bilateral stimulation is coupled with thinking about an image that could be disturbing along with a negative cognition, it really takes away the emotional intensity attached to that memory. And that bilateral stimulation is really kind of an amazing thing that just helps reprocess. It doesn't make you forget. It's not hypnosis. but it does help reprocess that memory and really allows the brain to create more adaptive information around that memory. So if I have a memory that, you know, and this is very simple, but I'm not safe, and it's connected to a memory of my father abusing me, what EMDR does is it helps create adaptive material, because you want yourself, you want this child to believe, well, now you are safe, and here are the reasons. And that's why we do a lot of teaching with children ahead of time, helping them understand the adaptive information before they get to the EMDR. Also, what we found is the bilateral stimulation coupled with some attachment work. And when we mean attachment work, we're talking about attachment resource development. We have specific exercises that we use, really helps increase the attachment and helps that child become more vulnerable and just more emotionally aware with the bilateral stimulation. So I would encourage listeners to really read up on EMDR. It is one of the most amazing treatments for trauma that really there is.
Well, absolutely. Well, Stephanie, I can't thank you enough. You made this interview so understandable for parents. You've given them hope. Again, they can go to your website, www.atcnnebraska.com. That is the center where Stephanie works. And they can get information, or they can go to your Facebook page, and that is the ATCN Nebraska.
Well, yeah, the Facebook page, you have to type in, Facebook's tricky, the Attachment and Trauma Institute, or the Attachment and Trauma Center of Nebraska. And just so the listeners know, it's ATC and then Nebraska spelled out. It's kind of tricky, so it's ATC and then the whole word Nebraska.com.
Got it. Thank you so much for your work that you do with kids. You know, it's kids get shamed in so many ways so easily. It's so nice to hear that you have a whole model that helps parents to use attunement, empathy, and compassion with their kids so that they can do a better job of really coping with some very difficult situations. Thanks
very
again.
Difficult. Thank you so much for having me. This was so enjoyable. I really appreciate this time today.
Excellent. Well, you take care and have a great week.
Okay. Thanks, Carol.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. So I was talking with Stephanie again. Her website is www.atcnnebraska.com. And as you can see, she's got a whole model for how to talk to parents when they've discovered that their kids have seen images that are upsetting and way beyond their years. And, you know, that's what this show's about. We teach skills that you may not know, and it just gives you more of a toolbox to work from. So I so appreciate you hanging in there today and talking with me. And again, for Tom, who sent that email, we are so glad to be available to him. And you stay tuned for our show again next week. We always have important information to talk about. You're listening to Carol Jurgensen Sheets. Hey, I'm Carol the Coach. This is Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And as I say at the end of every show, you know, there will only be one of you at all times. Fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. And I'll see you next week.